Off the Puck Hockey is sponsored in part by Hoddle Services. If you're looking for a disc jockey, karaoke host, video jockey to videographer, our company can help. With over 20 years of experience, we would be happy to help with your special event. You can contact us at 226-988-2895 or visit us at our website at hoddleservices.vpweb.ca. That's Hoddle Services. We look forward to hearing from you and helping with your special event.
Hey, what's going on, OTP fans? Thanks for tuning in to a live recording. It's a rare one. It's new. It's 1 o'clock on a Saturday, but it's 8 o'clock in Russia. So can't wait to introduce our guests. But this is season 3, episode 16. This is our 76th episode. I don't know if you knew that, Style. 76th episode, actually. Yeah, we just recorded our 75th last time, so I just got the notification. So pretty crazy that we've done 75 of these amazing shows, and can't wait to get into it. Yeah, crazy, right? But I'm your host, Tyler Fiennes. You can catch Off the Puck Hockey on Rogers TV Channel 20, Saturday nights at 9 p.m., Rogers TV Channel 13 in London and St. Thomas. But usually, you catch our live recordings Mondays at 9 p.m., but this is a special occasion, so we're making sure that we treat our guests fairly. And obviously, being an eight-hour difference, we want to make sure that our guest has, can get his sleep, because I don't know if you've seen how many points this guy has put up. Puts up a lot, so we want to make sure he gets his rest. All right? Not going to be doing these interviews in the middle of the night, but I want to say hello to our co-host, Adam Styles. What's up, fella?
Not too much, buddy. Just just got the one kid down for a nap. The other one's up with mom on the iPad, so all's good in the household. And happy to hear and happy to have Dan here. And introduce him, man.
No, we're gonna introduce him in a second. But I'll tell you what, I'm just letting everyone know right now. I'm producing and I'm actually doing the and I'm hosting the show. But I am sick as a dog, so I'm gonna be muting my ass a lot in this interview. Just letting everybody know ahead of time. But before we even start.
Don't give it to me over the mic.
Yeah, seriously, right? Quick condolences to the Balkan family on the passing of their son, Teddy, in their high school hockey game in Connecticut. Just awful news. And obviously condolences going out to the family. It's something you don't want to hear in playing the game that we love. So, condolences to the Balkan family. The Edmonton Oilers, they're heading the wrong direction in the standings. Our boy Mike Walker's Pens. Unreal winning streak right now with 10 games. They're hot. Lots of bad hockey teams in the NHL right now. Lots of bad teams. We're going to talk about that later. But first, I want to introduce our guest to, again, all the way from Russia. All the way from Russia. He played 88 games in the NHL, currently playing in the KHL. I can't even pronounce the team he's playing for, so I'm going to let him do that on his own. I want to welcome Dan Sexton. Dan Sexton, what's up, fella?
There it broke up a little bit there.
Did it, Bear?
Yeah. Oh,
there we go.
Yeah, Neftohimik Nizhnekamsk is the name. Nizhnekamsk is the city. And Neftohimik is like petrochemical, like huge factory that makes tires for half of the world that we have in our city. And that's where the money for the team and other teams and other sports that they fund around Russia, around our little area. And that's like the meaning of the name. And I've been to the factory. It's absolutely huge. And like most of the city works at the factory. It's just a crazy deal. But that's kind of the basis of the name.
That's awesome.
Yeah, I was looking at it. I'm like, I can't pronounce that. There's nothing I can do that's ever going to
try and pronounce it. I'm not even trying.
I know. It's like a 13 syllables.
Yeah.
Have you been following much of the KHL? It's funny, the NHL and the KHL. Like, do you still follow the NHL after
absolutely,
obviously playing there?
Yeah. It's a perfect time to wake up. We wake up and the highlights are just finishing up. Like the games are finished, and so I'll sit at breakfast pretty much every day and just flip on like the 5 minute highlights, and they just run through the games, and you get a good feel of like you know, like you said, who's playing well, who's struggling. And so you can keep up. I don't watch a lot of live games. Like today, since there's a 2 o'clock game, I think it's Dallas and somebody, Pittsburgh maybe, I could stay up and that would be on at 10 p.m. my time. I could watch 2 hours of that or something. But like, otherwise it's almost, you know, it's the worst time to watch live. It's like 5 a.m. So yeah, but I watch the highlights. So I keep track. I like to keep track.
Nice. So yeah, over in Russia, you originally grew up in Minnesota. How was life growing up in Minnesota, and how'd you get into hockey then?
You know, for me, it was pretty big family-wise. Like, you know, my dad played, uncles played at the high school level. And so I was brought into it at a real young age, at like 3 or 4 years old, skating with my dad and twin brother, Joe. He played for a little while until he was about 6 or 7, and then he stopped. But yeah, I mean, it was huge. Like we played all the time, buddies, outside rink, every like old school, like everything like you think of when you think of Minnesota hockey. That's what we did. That's how I grew up. And yeah, it was the best. It was absolutely the best. So much fun.
So Minnesota high school hockey is huge, and it's probably one of, between Minnesota and Michigan is probably, you know, probably the two best high school states in the U.S. I have a really tough time, you know, wrapping my head around high school hockey, because obviously here in Ontario, things are a lot different, right? Like AAA is crazy here. Our high school sports really don't get a lot of play. How does Minnesota's high school league so good? Like what happened?
I would say like just the numbers of guys that are playing. I think guys, I think the tradition of it, guys want to stay there and stay with their teammates. They don't want to run off to play AAA in Illinois or some other place. Like they don't have to, because the hockey's right there for you. Like you hear about guys from the South, they have to kind of come up north and to find hockey. Well, we picked up some guys from California and Texas. We've had guys like that just come up and find a way onto our high school team, and they're good players. And so you just like, guys want to play there. They want that experience. You get to go to high school with them. You're spend every day with the same guys, and they become some of your best friends. And you really can't, and it could be from age 5 to 18, like like 13 years straight of playing with the same guys, give or take. And like, you just can't really find that anywhere else. It's really just, it's awesome the way that they do it. And I hope that it stays that way. And not too many parents try to like, you know, get away from that. I hope it still has that tradition, you know, 10, 20 years from now.
Well, Adam and I can tell you, you know, we don't, high school sports in Canada are, well, in Ontario are basically non-existent. I mean, they're there, but they're not the same. They're not even close to the same level as some of the sports in the US. Yeah. But the one thing that I was always curious about is, you know, what's your practice schedule like? Like, obviously, you know about junior hockey, you played, you understand how that works. Like, did you guys practice every day? Like, and then you went, you know, like, did you practice once a week, twice a week? You're still in high school.
Yeah.
And how many games were you playing, like, in a season?
Yeah, that's the one thing.
They play, like, 50.
The one thing I was going to say is, like, the one thing that you give back is, like, we play 25 regular season games plus playoffs. So, like, you might get to 30 games, roughly, at most. But like, you practice every day. Saturday and Tuesdays are the games, and you pretty much practice every other day besides Sunday. So you get a lot of ice, but like, I think it's up like in the summertime. If you're real serious about it, you'll join one of those select teams and you'll try to get another 30 games in to get to your 60 games, maybe in a season, in a whole year. But it's like two different teams. So you have the high school version of it, which is awesome. And that's like the official version. And then you have the summer, which is like Minnesota Blades, Minnesota, like they have a million teams and they play in these tournaments, some in Canada, some in Boston. Minnesota has a couple, and you end up getting your games in, but like, it's not like midgets or, you know, where you play 50 or 60 with the same team.
You a
baseball fan at all?
I am. Like, I played baseball until about eighth grade, but yeah, like that is, baseball's probably, I'm more of a golfer. So I guess in the summertime, I'm mostly golfing and watching golf as opposed to watching like the Minnesota Twins, but I still will try to catch a few live games for sure.
Do you see any of the outdoor game there?
Oh yeah, I watched the highlights of that, like the extended highlights. Super interested in watching that, and I was really mad that they weren't playing in the afternoon so I could watch live, because usually those games
right?
are on at
yeah.
like 1 p.m. perfect for me, and yeah. This game was on yeah. at 7 p.m. So that yeah. was the one thing that I was kind of rattled about. But other than that, like, I watched the highlights, and I mean, it looked like the game was kind of over quickly, but then they came back a little bit. But definitely interested in watching the Wild, especially with some of the new players they have.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I was kind of shocked there that they put it at nighttime.
Yeah, me too.
I think they're done with the afternoon games, boys. I think they're done. I think
really?
it's a lot. Yeah, once they just with the weather and the sun, I think
well,
they
was,
gotta start
was
playing
last year?
Those games, right?
The ice was melt.
Yeah, exactly.
Where was it last year? The ice was
yeah, hard. That's true. Was
exactly.
it Tahoe?
Yeah. Lake Tahoe,
Tahoe?
Yeah. Yeah. I think they've
yeah,
made the decision.
Yeah.
They've made the decision that that they're probably gonna do night games as opposed to doing
that makes sense.
You know, yeah, it does. So but you know what's crazy. Exactly.
Yeah.
You know what? Before we get into your, you know, kind of how you got into the pros, I actually am really curious about your path, because I coach a team called the Orangeville Americans. I own the team, and okay. everybody wanted to play in the North American League and the USHL, you know, coming out of our program, which was obviously very hard. It's basically, for people that don't know, it's the GOJHL, our Junior B loop. It's the OJHL of the U.S. You know, when you were done at Apple Valley High in Minnesota and you went to Wichita, you know, talk about that experience in the NAHL and kind of how it prepared you for the next step, which is the USHL ROHL comparison.
Yeah. Like after high school, I was 5'7", 125, 30 pounds, and I was 18 years old.
Huge.
And I just had, I mean, I was like, I had no business playing, you know, junior hockey, but I was able to play in Wichita and the NAHL, like you were talking about, which is kind of like a step below the USHL and that's the top league. And so I just went there, just like showed up. I think a friend of a friend kind of got me a tryout or got me on the team, or got me a chance. And I ended up having a really fun season, like living in Texas, playing golf, and had a nice host family and met a few really cool guys that I still keep in touch with, actually a couple of them from California and a couple Minnesota guys on the team. But like, it's crazy like how I ended up in Texas, because there's NAHL teams closer to Minnesota, but I just somehow ended up in Texas, and I'll never probably fully know why it happened like that, but I'm happy it did. And the next, yeah, so that was, I mean, I played pretty much every game there, had a good season on a pretty good team, and just a great experience. Like first junior hockey where you don't have school, all you're focusing on is the sport. So you feel like almost like professional in that way, where you wake up and you try to take care of yourself. And that's where I learned how to really like hit the weight room and really try to put some muscle on. And by the time I left there, I was like quite a bit heavier and quite a bit stronger and faster. And then I was ready to play in the USHL. And that's where things kind of started to take off for me at like 19 years old, I would say.
So would you consider yourself a bit of a late bloomer?
Oh, the latest bloomer, which I think can be a good, yeah, like super
edging,
late.
Edging
like,
the line.
Yeah, like, I mean, I was just so, I mean, in high school, I had like two, you know, seasons where I basically led the conference in scoring, but I was so little that I think it was probably, as far as taking the next step, I was always told like it was going to be hard because of your size.
Yeah.
And so
yeah.
I knew that, but I just kind of tried to work out with what I had. And then once the size started to come, I grew a couple of inches, I gained 30 pounds, 40 pounds, and all of a sudden, and I was actually getting faster and stronger. Then the game just became so much easier for me. And all of a sudden, like, it didn't seem like it was going to be something that really held me back. Like I thought at the age of 18, by 19, 20, I kind of thought like I was big enough to where it was going to come down to more like, how good are you instead of like, how big are you?
So how much are you weighing in right now? Like, what are you clocking in?
175, just a
yeah.
clean 175. Yeah. Nothing.
Clean.
No, you know, yeah. Just, in the summer I might get up to 180. And then I'll come down to like 172, 173 during the season. But I try to keep my weight up a little bit. And as I've gotten older, I've been able to keep the weight on a little bit better. But yeah, 175. And just like, that's kind of where I like to be at. And, you know, I can usually tell if I'm like a couple pounds heavy or a couple pounds light by this point, which is kind of crazy.
Yeah, for sure. Back to Minnesota quick. Which winters are worse, Minnesota or Russia?
Ooh.
I got it. I gotta go with Russia just because it seems like it seems they just like they just they I mean it's just the snow turns like black, it gets dirty, it's just like it's not, you know, it's not as it's I feel like Minnesota doesn't snow as much as Russia. It feels like it snows every single day, it just pounds you over and over. So, and it does get, I would say, slightly colder here too, even colder than Minnesota, maybe not like Winter Classic. I know that was like super cold, but this is like almost every day seems like it's like that. But I would say Russia has the edge, but obviously Minnesota, like, you got to respect the winters. They're right up there.
Okay. Yeah, that's cold there. Yeah, we get cold here, but yeah, nothing. Those winters you guys get in both places. That's wild.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Fancy. Keep going.
Yeah, sorry. I was just going to ask about where you – so where in respects to, like, Moscow is your location? Like, where's your home rink?
We're actually in a good location. We're pretty close to a lot of teams. We're about an hour and 20-minute flight, like, southeast of Moscow, I would say, is the best that I could describe it. And there's a bunch of, like, Ufa and Magnitogorsk and Chelyabinsk and Kazan and all these teams – cities that are big cities in the KHL, but like people haven't heard of them, are kind of all in that area too. And then you got St. Petersburg and Moscow to the west. Mm-hmm. But so we're in a good location. But yeah, it's an hour and a half flight. It's really easy to get to Moscow. And then from there, I can get to New York or Miami or wherever I'm trying to go.
Nice.
Yeah.
What's the longest trip you make in the KHL?
Our last trip, we were in Vladivostok we had 5 games in 9 days, and Vladivostok is about 20, I would say 20 miles from the North Korean border, North Korea. They share a border with North Korea.
If you look it
up on a map. Yeah. So we were out there. It's 7 more hours ahead. So it's 15 hours ahead of you guys. And we played games. We were out there just like living like zombies. We were trying to stay on the Moscow time zone. We're trying to stay on our time zone. So these games are at 10 a.m. for us. And we're just waking up and playing hockey and then like staying awake through the whole night and then sleeping during the morning and then playing again nighttime. But really it's morning time for us. And that's how that was Christmas for me. That was December 23rd through December 29th. And it was brutal. And it's always brutal. I hate that trip. And every year we have to do it. And it's just 7-hour flight and a 7-hour time change.
Oh, that's ridiculous.
It is. It's the one thing about the KHL where I'm just like, you know, those are the moments where you really wonder what you're doing.
As long as the check clears, buddy. As long as the check's clear.
Yeah, I mean, those cities are just, I don't know how guys play in those cities. Because when they come back to us, they're playing at 5 a.m. their time. So I don't know how they do it. But
that's wild, eh?
It's crazy. It is crazy.
Yeah, that's absolutely nuts. So yeah, backing it up again. So how did you, your whole career start at Bowling Green? How did you get that opportunity? And
funny enough, I was playing in the USHL with the Sioux Falls Stampede and loving it. Like Kevin Hartzell was our coach. He's a great coach. One of my favorite coaches, a Minnesota guy. We had like 12 Minnesota guys and like 12 guys not from Minnesota in the USHL. But I had a... I had a really slow start to the season, and so Division I teams weren't like super interested in me. So I ended up committing to a school called Bentley University, which is a smaller Division I school like that plays in, I think I forget what they even play in, but they're a real small school in Boston, more of a business school. They are Division I, but like it costs a bunch of money to go there, and I was only getting a small scholarship. But like
I know someone going to Bentley.
Yeah, I committed there, and the coach was awesome, and I had a couple buddies that were going there, and but then like it really freed me up to play like my best hockey because I wasn't worried about a scholarship anymore, and then things like really started going my way, and I started doing really well, and then we ended up winning the national championship, and I had the most goals in the playoffs, and all these guys are like, well, you know, these other Division I schools all of a sudden were interested. So I did something that probably the hardest thing I've done is I decommitted right at the last second and ended up, getting the full scholarship to Bowling Green, which is kind of like what I always dreamed about. And so I ended up taking that and And then obviously I played 2 years there and against really good competition in the CCHA with Michigan and Ohio State and Notre Dame, Michigan State. And yeah, so it was awesome there. And after 2 years there, you know, our team didn't do that great, but I was able to have some success and get a chance to move on to the NHL.
That part on your elite prospects really intrigued me.
I think at the time people were like, what's going on? Cause like I went from college to like, you know, we didn't have an AHL. Yeah. So we didn't have an AHL team in Anaheim. So I went to preseason in Anaheim and I'd played two games and actually did really well, but they had nowhere to send me because we didn't have an AHL team and no one like knew who I was, I think. So they're like, well, what do we do? Like this guy. So I went to the coast and played like 13 or 14 games there. Or maybe 18 games.
Yeah, it looks like you made that league your bitch.
Yeah, so like, yeah.
Wow.
26 points.
Yeah, thanks for coming.
Basically, Anaheim was just trying to find me an AHL team. And like, they had a couple choices and they ended up sending me to Manitoba because they thought that that's where I'd get the best opportunity. So I'm playing on a team with Vancouver Canucks players and I'm the one Anaheim guy. I actually had Brian Salcedo as another Anaheim guy, just me and him on a team. So it was really weird because you're like, you're really not, you're not in the same organization. Just a freak deal where I was like, what did I get myself into? Like, why did I sign here? The one team with no minor league. But then after five games, you know, I got the break of a lifetime and I was able to get called up after just like five games in the minors. And I don't know if that would have ever happened had things been different.
What I want to know, because this is, you're one of the rare undrafted guys that goes right away into the NHL. Like, what's that okay, let's say, so what was that like walking into camp and being like, nobody knows who I am?
Right.
Like, I don't know. Like, I'm just trying to wrap my head how I want to ask this because I never really put two and two together until now. Like, that to me is just crazy. How do you, you know what I mean? Like, I'm sorry, I'm having a tough time asking you like the right way. Like, I just wanted to feel like how you're like, how they treated you.
Yeah. The only thing that I kept using was just whirlwind because it was such a bizarre, the way things went down was so bizarre how you could go from a complete unknown in college with having a good sophomore season to having one guy on the Anaheim organization believe in you enough to take a chance on you. And
who was it?
From the,
sorry,
Dave,
I just want to
David,
forget.
It was David McNabb who was just retired. He just retired. He's like, he was basically there since the beginning of the Ducks. Like, and he took pride in finding like undrafted free agent players like myself. And he found Andy McDonald. He found Curtis Joseph. He found Andrew Ebbett. So found Dustin Penner. And so I was fortunate enough that he saw a game. We're playing against Ohio State, and he was going to Michigan to scout their draft picks in Michigan. And there was this huge snowstorm that took down their arena. So he just drove down they couldn't play the game. So he drove down the road to Bowling Green and watched us play. And from then on, I've been in contact with him. And if that had never happened, I never get seen by him. And he doesn't end up ever seeing me or ever knowing about me. And then that turned into basically that's how it started. And then, like you said, you went from college to the coast to the AHL to the NHL all in like a few months. And it was hard to believe. And I think that probably played to my advantage that it happened so fast that I didn't even know like what to make of it. And I just played and it couldn't have worked out any better. But like, yeah, it's one of those things I'll never understand other than just I had a lot of good fortune on my side in that time frame.
That's wild. Yeah.
Yeah.
That would look crazy. One of those teams you played for in the coast there is the Condors, Bakersfield Condors. I'm not sure if the timing of this all or anything, but were you there before or after? I know you've probably seen the clip of the Condors.
I know what you're going to say. Yeah. So, so I had gotten called up to Anaheim and, my poor couple guys, and I'm not even like, it's that clip is just crazy of that goal. I mean, I'm just sitting there just feeling for these guys and oh, is this
yeah
oh okay Oh, this is a good one. This one was, okay, so that one is, I was already, 2009 is when I was there, so.
That Star
So your boys are on this?
Oh, no. No, I wasn't there for that. I remember that, though. I remember that. Poor guy. That poor
guy. But your guy, you did have guys that were, you knew guys that were there for
that? Yeah, yeah, yeah. There's a few guys I think that I knew that were playing it. That was like 3 years later. But yeah, the Condors, like, I think they turned into an AHL team for Edmonton. And I don't know, are they still an AHL team now? I think they are.
I think they are. I believe they are, man.
So it's actually like, I mean, California, it's a good, obviously a good place to play. But when you're in the East Coast League on an NHL contract, you're kind of like, well, this isn't where I want to be. So that was a tough way to start my career. But looking back, like, maybe those are the steps that needed to happen in order for things to work out. And because the AHL was a super high level coming out of college. So maybe I was lucky to get some games in the East Coast League to be ready for those games in the AHL down the road.
I'm actually surprised that more teams don't approach their development using the East Coast League and then moving guys up. I mean, East Coast League, you know what that's like. They got like 90 players on their roster by the end of the year, right? It's a freaking turnstile. Like, I just don't understand why they're like, yeah, you know what, we're going to throw you right into the A as opposed to playing in the East Coast League. Put up a few points in the coast, then jump up to the A and go from there. I don't know if it's a cap thing or
You know, that's a good question. I'm not sure. I think for some guys, the AHL is all they can handle and then some when they come out of college. So it wouldn't be – it wouldn't be the worst thing, but it definitely worked out for a few of us that were kind of stuck in limbo there, not having an AHL team. But it was a great time. Some unbelievable guys playing in the East Coast League, just great guys. And I wouldn't trade that experience for anything anyways.
Yeah. Go ahead.
Just a little side note, he still finished top 10 at Bakersfield by year's end, and this guy's had 40-plus games more than him. Just not a big deal.
But you know what, though? What's crazy? Like, then you play in the NHL. He put up 19 points. He got more than Nick Ritchie did with the Leafs, and now he's gone. then you play another – then you play 47. You get 13, and you don't make it back. To me, it feels like either they gave up on you or you decided to move on. Like, what happened there? Because it's still like, it's not productive, but you and I both know you're not a third, fourth line guy. If you're not playing first and second line, then you're not going and banging.
Yeah. So with that, like, I went into the summertime and we got a contract done, and I ended up getting a one way contract on the second year of a 2 year deal. But like with the numbers that I'd put up, I'd probably deserve a better contract, but like, things just kind of went how they went. And I ended up taking maybe a little bit less contract than what I should have had, and which should play to your favor. But to me, like, I came back to camp and I was like as strong as I'd ever been, but I was like, conditioning wise, wasn't at where I needed to be right out of camp. So I think I just didn't have as good of a camp as I wanted to have that third training camp. And then it just kind of felt like, you're right, like, they kind of did give up on me. And I knew things were going to be pretty much dire when I had 9 points in 2 games in the AHL. And the brass was watching, I think, in the game. They still called up everyone else other than me. And that's when I kind of knew, like, I was probably done in Anaheim and they had moved on to other guys. And that's fine because, you know, that's pro hockey. But that definitely, that third year, like you said, it just – That one will always sting a little bit because that's where I probably had a really good chance to like really become like an NHLer like for a long time, and it just didn't ever end up happening. All I got was a couple preseason games, and so that one still hurts, but it's part of the sport. And like you said, if I would have stuck it out more, I probably could have had way more opportunities. But I decided to go overseas, and I ended up never making it back, and that's a whole other story, kind of.
Absolutely. Yeah, you came up in Canada, played for a bit. Did you? How was your time in Canada? Did you get any chance to tour around at all or anything? I know it's a short time, but
I played in Manitoba, and it was awesome. Like, it was NHL as NHL gets without being in the NHL. Like, it was amazing. The facilities were unreal. Craig Heisinger, I believe that's his name. He was like, I think that's his name. He's assistant GM maybe now, or maybe GM in Winnipeg.
Like he was the GM. I think you got it right.
Yeah, he's worked his way up from the bottom, and he's like, he was an unbelievable guy and gave me every opportunity, made me feel so comfortable on that team. And the fans were awesome. Like I said, like the locker room, everything. We had so much experience in that room. We had Mike Keane on that team.
Nice.
And we had Baumgartner on that team. We had some guys that just like you couldn't ask to learn more from than these guys.
And
so all that experience was amazing. I felt like, I mean, I was the youngest guy on the team, and I felt like a mega rookie on that team. It was just, it was a bunch of experienced guys. And so it was really cool to get that experience in Canada. It's just there's nothing like playing in Canada.
Absolutely, man.
Well, now, go ahead.
You were never in the draft, were you?
Undrafted?
No.
Undrafted?
No, I wasn't drafted. I was undrafted.
That's so what you're talking about. Figure it out.
Were you ever interested at all? Yeah, sorry.
Yeah, thanks for coming out to the party.
No. Not even close. No one would be interested. I was like, I was so small. I was just completely irrelevant. I had no chance. If the list was 4,000 names long, I wouldn't have been on it.
No shit, eh?
Like they could have gone. They could have been drafting for like a week, and there's no chance I would have made it. So. That's like, that wasn't even on my mind at all. I never even thought about the NHL until my head coach like pulled me into a room my sophomore season at Bowling Green and said like a couple teams have asked him about me from the NHL. And like I had just 4 years of college, get a business degree, go to school or go to work. That was like, I would have loved to even, yeah. So the thought of the NHL was nowhere near my radar until I was basically playing in it.
Yeah, no doubt.
And then
we always like to ask this one on the show. You walk into Anaheim, you get called up, everything. Who were kind of the first some people you got greeted to, welcomed you to the club?
Yeah, first game in Minnesota against the Wild. Like,
no kidding.
Nice.
That just shows what kind of run I was on during that time. And I remember like Tamo Solani broke his hand. He got hit with a slap shot. And the guy called me. I was in Peoria, Illinois. And he's like, you might get called up. We have a guy hurt. Wow. And I was like, okay, let me look at the schedule. They're playing Dallas that day. The next day they play in Minnesota. And I was like, oh my goodness, please let this work out. Please let this happen. And then when it did, obviously, like I had all my friends there. They all bought their own tickets. Like I had no time to do anything. The team bought like my dad and mom and like sister and her boyfriend tickets or something, and that's it, because like we had no time. But anyways, like I get to the locker room, and like you got Koivu, Saku Koivu, Ryan Getzlaff, Corey Perry, Scott Niedermeyer, Bobby Ryan, Tamo Solani's he's there but he's injured. I mean, our team was just like, it was crazy how many legends were on that team. Like I got to sit by Scott Niedermeyer for like the whole time I was there in Anaheim. And I just tried not to like drop my skate on him every time I took it off the hook.
Yeah,
that's like all I was worried about, because the guy is just a legend. And if he ever talked to me, I just tried to soak it all in and just, absolutely, you know, just enjoy the whole experience. But yeah, those first few games were crazy, playing in Minnesota and then kind of getting on a nice little run was really cool.
You got your first two goals in the third game, wasn't it?
Yeah, third game we were playing Dallas. I was playing with Saku Koivu, Bobby Ryan, and we had some chances the first couple of games. But then the third period of that game, we were down 3-1, and I scored two in the third to tie it 3-3. And then Koivu scored in overtime, so we won 4-3 and got like number one star of the game. And that's something I'll never forget. Like, just couldn't ask for anything more. And then after that, I went through a little run where a lot of things were going, like a lot of good, you know, I'd shoot the puck and it'd somehow find its way into the net. A lot of good fortune and playing with awesome players. Like it was like a dream come true for those few months that I was there that first season.
Who's the goalie buried him?
Marty Turco.
Oh, nice, Marty.
Nice.
Yeah.
That's
nice.
Got the puck still?
Yeah, I got the pucks. Yeah. I have the one puck. I actually didn't get the other one, which was, I don't know why, but I have like the NHL like frames it for you, game sheet, photo, like puck, everything. And I think it's in my dad's like office, like his den right now. And once I kind of have a place to live, I'll probably ask for it to put it in my house.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, a little connection with Bobby Ryan. My wife in university, her roommate was dating Bobby Ryan, so she...
Oh, I remember that. Really?
Yes, I remember that. She had him over a couple times and partied with him and whatnot. And then, when I met him, she told me a story. I'm like, oh, I met you a little bit too late. It would have been cool to meet him and everything. And, yeah, what a guy he was and how good. Super skilled. And
he had
happened to him a little bit ago, but I'm glad to see he kind of cleaned up and got everything straight. And then... I believe he's retired now, or is he in Detroit?
Well, it's kind of interesting right now. Like, he's kind of trying to make a little comeback, possibly, to maybe play in the Olympics, I think. But if that doesn't work out, I think maybe he'll be done. I'm not sure. But when I was playing with him, like, he had some of the best hands you've ever seen, and just an unbelievable player, great guy to play with. So, yeah, he had a heck of a career.
Absolutely.
Hey, Dan, you decided to make the trip over to Europe, and the first team you head in is you play in the Liga, and like I said, I love European hockey, and you was gonna say you played with Rantanen.
I did. He was my line mate for a few games. He was 17. I drove him around in my little car that they give you when you play in that league. He's 17, doesn't know one word of English. And just an awesome kid, like has the size, but just like so skinny. And then like a couple, literally 2 years later, 3 years later, he's just tearing it up in the NHL. It's just crazy how it goes, how it happens.
Did you think he'd be that good? Like, you know what I mean?
At 17, if you could play in the Finnish Elite League at 17, which he could, and he could hold his own to an extent, the kid's going to have a chance for sure. And then when he went first round, I was like, okay, that's awesome. But then where he went from 18 to 22 or whatever, is just, you have to make that huge jump to be able to be where he is now. You don't just fall into that. You have to just it's hard to imagine a guy, being that good as he is. I couldn't have imagined, but he clearly just got so much. He clearly just had such big upside that it's been cool to watch him, actually. Really cool.
Oh, that's so cool. And then you get Russia, and we love our Russian stories on here. I know that's why we got you on here. We love our Russian stories. So, I want to hear, usually I go first 24 hours in Russia. Do you remember your first 24?
I do. I was driving from the airport. It was January 15th, I think, or maybe something like that. All I know is, I was driving from the airport, and the shootout was playing between Russia and U.S. and Sochi when Oshie had so it's on the Russian radio when I'm listening to in the van on the way to and I feel like I'm driving through a James Bond scene because it's just pure snow everywhere, just white. There's no houses. There's no villages. There's just nothing. I don't even know where I am or why I'm there. But that shootout was being played on the radio, and I had no idea what was going on. I could just hear some names, and I didn't know any Russian, so I had no clue. But that was kind of the time frame of when I first got there. My first 24 hours, I played a game in the first 24 hours against Magnitogorsk, which Mike Keenan was coaching Magnitogorsk. That was
lunatic.
One of the best teams basically one of the best teams in Europe. We played against them. They whacked us pretty good, 5-2. That was my first 24 hours. I was at the Baza, living in the Baza, eating noodle soup and chicken leg and just absolutely zero seasoning or sauce on anything. And that was my life there for the last 9 years, basically.
Jesus. That's great.
Speaking of Russian stories, and you play with him a little bit, Stapleton, he's been on Chicklets for a while.
Yeah, yeah. Like, I was like, the stories he's telling, like, I was there as well. And like, it's crazy. Like, people, I'm really happy that he got so much, like, he got so much play for those stories, because that's not even like 2% of the stories that like I've accumulated playing for that team that he mentioned, for that coach. And yeah. Like, I remember Stapleton, like, I'm doing battle drills in the corner, and the coach comes up to me like, where's Tim? Like, the guy was legitimately like, he like refused to come on the ice. He just refused to skate. He's like, he was like hiding in the gym. And that's how bad it was. Like you literally that's are this insane. Like, he's like an NHL level hockey player, like awesome hockey player. He's scoring every game he's playing and like playing great. I was playing with him, but like mentally it's just so hard that you're just like, I don't even think he like didn't want to spend one more second on this team. He just wanted out. So we ended up trading him to Magnitogorsk to play for Mike Keenan. And that's where he had some stories about him too on the podcast.
Yeah.
But Nizhnikamsk, we played together and it was awesome. I loved playing with him, and I really wish he wouldn't have tried to get out of there, but I don't blame him, because the team we were on and the city that we're in, the team I'm still on now, you know, for my sixth year, I spent 3 years somewhere else, but I'm back here for year number six. Like, it's not for everybody and it's not easy. His stories were spot on. And it's like, we had like, that coach is like a legend over here for the way that he trains, and doing a 10 kilometer run in the middle of the woods on a February night with using your iPhone as a flashlight with pure ice everywhere, guys falling down everywhere. I mean, that's a normal Tuesday.
Jesus. Oh my God. So you're back with this team, and you, first year you got there, you were actually, you led the team in scoring.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. The first year when I played with Timmy, we were he left, but like I was able to continue playing with Matt Anderson, another American guy, and like we just kind of kept plugging along and ended up having a great year and ended up playing in World Championships for USA after that season.
That's unbelievable. And then you went and played with. I know what Styles has been dying to ask you this. You went and played with Datsyuk.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Datsyuk. Like his. He's. He's obviously one of the biggest legends ever, and I played 2 seasons with him, and last year I got to play on a line with him for a handful of games, and like the guy is just the most unique, like there's nobody like him in hockey. There's just no comparable. So to be able to see him at 42 years old, he could easily still play this year, I'm convinced.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know why he didn't, but it must have been just his own personal reasoning. He's still helping the team out in like a manager standpoint, but the guy is just a hockey player and one of the best like players I'll ever, you know, have played with, and just a great guy too.
What is he is like when you, if you're going out, like let's say you're going to dinner with these guys or whatever the case is, or you're going out, yeah. What are you treated like? Especially with Dad's, yeah. Like if he's going somewhere, like, he's a legend, right?
Yeah. Like around the city, like I've tried to like go out to dinner with him, and like, he just wouldn't, because I think he just honestly like knew what would happen, or like he just really tried to be pretty low key, and he'd be probably trying to get the restaurant like with where there's no people there and he could go and eat, because like there's like a Datsyuk arena, like brand new arena in that city, like all like, I don't know if he like started it or it's at this like first class, like whenever you see those Russian videos of like the 6-year-olds that are like doing spinoramas and going top shelf, like no problem. That's like at his arena in our city that he started, and they have this great hockey development facility there. And he like, it's his name, and I don't know, you know, he put his name on it. So basically he's just like, when you go out with him, obviously you're treated like amazingly, and he knows everybody, but he's such a quiet guy that I don't think he was one to like take advantage of it, or he didn't like it. He didn't like the fanfare, I don't think, very much at all. Like, I think he's just really a quiet and humble guy. Like, you would never expect him to be like a superstar.
Nice. And he also played with another legend there from Canada, Nigel Dawes.
Legend.
Yeah. Well, legend over there in the KHL.
He is, without question. Like, you look at numbers, like I think he's second or third. I think he's second or third all-time scorer in the KHL, only behind Mosiakin, who's like, you know, the man over here. He's like the Russian, the guy that nobody knows about. That's
the Russian
like one of the
Wayne.
Best players. Yeah, the Russian Wayne. But Dazi like has had such, he had such an amazing career over here. And playing with him, like the first season I played with him, he had like 70 points. And like, that's just an insane amount of points in this league. Like the guy just knows how to put up points in this league. He's got a great shot. And just like, he plays a certain way that just like teams can't stop. And he's just, yeah, like he was a treat to play with too. Like, yeah, he's, can't say enough good things about him.
How much more do you got in the tank to stay over there? Cause you're, what are you, 33?
I'm 34. I think my wife came to Nizhnikamsk for 3 months this year and decided like we're done after this year. So,
she said that's enough, eh?
With this league, with the KHL, like yeah. We'll see. We'll see with the KHL. I don't want to never say never. Probably always leave the door slightly cracked open because I can't help myself and I'm addicted to rubles. But like,
oh really?
No, we always say that. We joke about the ruble addiction that goes around over here in Russia. How guys keep putting up with this stuff, but it's an epidemic. But no, like I think I'd like to try and play in a league like in Europe next year, where it's actually more enjoyable and the travel isn't so brutal, and you can just kind of really take a bus for a couple hours to play a game, not hop on a plane every single time. And I think that would be really a lot easier on my mental state and just stress and. I think all in all, I'm just ready to kind of take that next step, but we'll see. Still don't really know for sure, but that's kind of where our head is at right now.
I'll call my boy, Johan in SC Bern. He's the head coach of SC Bern in the Swiss league. I'll give him a buzz.
Yeah.
I'll shoot him a Facebook message. We'll get this done. I get 5% though. Yeah. I get 5%.
Yeah. You can take whatever you want. Take it all. I just want to play over there.
Yeah.
That country is beautiful.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And but you've made a pretty good living over there, and they've obviously taken good care of you. Now, is there a difference in like pay and stuff like that depending on where you play?
There is, for sure. Like the big clubs, I mean, like back when like three, four, five, six years ago, like there was money to be made, very, very much so, like very, like huge amounts. And now the ruble currency itself has gotten a little bit worse compared to the dollar. So teams have had to kind of like pay you more to be it worth the same amount. And also they initiated a cap of like a billion rubles. Cap is like how much your team can spend, which is about 15 million bucks. But it used to be like the wild, wild west. Like if you wanted to pay a guy, you know, 4 million bucks, you could do that. But which, you know, they tax you at 13% instead of 50, you know? So it's like guys are taking home a lot more money that are from Canada because they're not paying any extra taxes when they come home at all. They claim like there's all these things. So, but anyways, like now the KHL has kind of tried to become more of a business that actually makes money and not just hemorrhage money like left and right like they used to. And I think that that's kind of brought the league to be more parity. Definitely more parity amongst the league, and the smaller teams have a better chance to compete against the bigger teams a little bit more, but those big teams still find a way to get all the best Russian players, which is what you need.
Do you take the Russian gas?
Yep. Nizhnikamsk, Stapleton was probably in line right ahead of me and in line right after me.
Let's go.
Our head coach would like throw me out of the line to get in there and stick that thing on his face. But then all of a sudden, like 4 or 5 years ago, I think they kind of stopped with it because I haven't heard anything about it lately. Like, I think it just became too old school, and I don't think it actually does anything other than just make you feel like you are on cloud nine for 3 minutes, and then you kind of come back to life, and you're like, okay, I'm still in a dump in Russia.
That's crazy.
For 3 minutes, though, you feel like you're like in heaven, basically. So it's one of the craziest things, the Russian gas. But I really think that maybe they just have heard so much of us making fun of the gas, like back in the United States or Canada, where like maybe they just stopped doing it now. I don't know, because I haven't heard any teams doing it in the last like 4 years.
Yeah, probably exactly. So much exposure now. They just kind of people. Keep it quiet now. Probably
it's gotten too. We've exposed them too much now.
I want to go back when we were talking about Anaheim. You had Danny Randy as a coach. How did you find him as a coach? And Fiennes also got references. Well, Fiennes, what was it last when Jorg referenced you, Randy? Because you hated goalies so much or something?
Oh, I can't remember. What the hell did I say?
Goalies. Did Randy hate goalies? Or is that?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. He said he doesn't like goalies.
Yeah, he's like, you remind me of Randy.
Just
Randy
stop the puck.
Shit about goalies and hated the goalie coaches.
Yeah, I think he kind of let the goalie coaches handle the goalies, and I definitely don't think that was his like forte. But I enjoyed it. Like, he was really obviously a really smart coach tactically, and I learned a ton from him. Yeah, I say like guys, you know, have had different experiences, but he gave me an opportunity, and he didn't call me up to play me fourth line and try to grind, because he like some coaches maybe would have done that with me, and he gave me a real chance. So I gotta like give him, you know, due for that. But then like, obviously there's the other side where like, I was also extremely intimidated by him, and being the first guy to the locker room, being a young guy, like, you know, running into him in the weight room and he's on the bike and I'm trying to like stretch, but like, it's not the most comfortable feeling. It's more old school, but I think, you know, I think the hockey culture has maybe changed a bit in the last few years, where maybe guys are a lot more comfortable with their I guess bosses, coaches. And but for me, he was all, like, if he brought me in to do video during the game or the next day, like, I mean, my palms are sweating and I'm nervous as can be, because I just don't want to make a bad impression whenever it was one-on-one. In the games you can kind of just go play, but practice for me was when I was really nervous, because if I screwed up, I had the older guys all over me, you know, telling me to sleep at night and welcome, you know, good morning. And every time you miss a pass. And so I was way more nervous in the practices. The games, everyone's pulling for the same way and being positive. It was always the practices where the coaches and the veterans kind of like made me the most nervous.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. You ever see Kessel's impressions of Randy?
Yeah, I do. I do remember that. I'm one of those. Yeah, I specifically, I'm not even going to try to repeat the impression, but I specifically remember it and the way he said his name. And it's just, it's too funny. It's too funny. There's some other guys too that have some things that are extremely funny. Like, just, there's some of the funniest guys. And obviously there's a lot to be, there's so many like situations where looking back, it's just hilarious. Like, it's not funny at the time. It's kind of nerve wracking, but then looking back, you just realize how funny, like how scared you were of this, of these people. Yeah. It's like, it's just crazy how you could be so nervous in these moments, but that's what they do to you sometimes. And that was life in the NHL for me.
Absolutely. And another guy, not so well, he's pretty well known and he's really well known now. Ryan Whitney. You ever see him having the success he's having today?
Yeah. And, become a I played with him too. Yeah. I played with him in Anaheim. He was there like for probably a year and a half, that like the whole time I was there, he was there too. Maybe 2 years or 2.5 years, maybe it was. But yeah, I mean, that guy was hilarious. Like, he was always talking in the locker room, like never stopped talking. And like, we just knew for a fact he was going to be doing radio. That was before podcast came out. So the fact that he's doing a podcast makes total sense. And on the podcast, I feel like he talks less than like he did in the locker room. He was just always talking, but it was always like super funny. And just like, you definitely wanted to like know what he was talking about, because it was usually like worth a good laugh.
Oh, yeah.
Do you think he's making more money doing the podcast than he did in the NHL?
I can't believe that he would be, but like, it's possible, because those guys are obviously killing it. And podcasts in general, I know, are like, but I just don't know enough about
the
monetizing with his own drink though too now. Like, he might be, if he's clearing, like, I mean, if he's making 7 figures doing what he's doing, imagine that. Like, I mean, he's going to the Winter Classic, so, you know, I mean, that's like doing these podcasts. I mean, that's a heck of a life. I mean, doing like, it's a lot better than, you know, getting beat up all the time on the ice for,
he might have a career when you're done, Dan. That would be that's where you got to head, is get back to Minnesota and start doing these podcasts. Cause I guarantee you got tons of stories about, living in Russia. Yeah. And again, ones where you can just go off.
Oh,
right?
That's the thing too. Right? Nigel Dawes always said, like, he'll go on like all these podcasts, but it's got to be after he's done like with Russia, because you don't want to bite the hand that feeds you
No,
and say a bunch of negative things about this place. But when you're done playing, you can kind of go back and you can write, you know, 1,000 chapters about 1,000 different things that looking back on are legitimately you would never see anywhere else. And it's all part of the experience. And like, I become so comfortable with it that now whenever there's new imports, I think they look at me and they're just like, they don't know how I'm not like more affected by some of the crazy stuff that goes on, because it's funny to watch them go through their own mental process of coming excited for the season and then just watch them kind of realize like how different it is here and watch them try to cope with it. And it's a different animal over here.
And this year's a different year for you because you're the only American guy on the team.
Yeah. Yeah. I've been really lucky having North American players. And like you said, this is the first year where I haven't had that in a long time. I had one other season, I think, where I had like this, but it definitely makes for some lonely, some lonely times. Like my family was here for 2.5 months, my daughter and my wife, but I mean, you can't ask them to stay here for much longer than that. So once they left, I've been kind of on my own. And yeah, it's like, it's as lonely as you could probably think it is. Like, yeah, when you guys asked me to do this podcast, damn, I was like, yep, I'm in. Whatever.
Oh,
whatever,
man, dude. Now I feel bad. Now I got to get you on like every day. Like, we got to talk. I'm like, Dan needs like an hour of like English conversation.
Yeah,
over here.
I need an hour to practice my English. I forget some of these words because I'm too busy speaking Russian and speaking like a 3-year-old, like I told you guys earlier.
Can you speak Russian?
I can speak about 50% probably.
That's pretty good, though. Russian's so hard to learn. It's ridiculously hard.
When our coach yells at me, he knows that I understand, and he expects me to say respond. That's where my Russian's at, which is pretty much says that they think that I can speak Russian, which as most import guys, they wouldn't even bother trying to talk to you, you know.
I know so the swear words. That's it.
Yeah.
I know the swear words because when they could, like, same thing. So I knew my Russian kids were chirping me. I knew exactly what was going on. I said, you want you guys to teach me all the Russian swear words.
That's
because
right.
if I hear
That's
one
right.
of them say it, I'm going to chew them out.
Oh, yeah, you could piece a conversation together just in swear words.
Buddy, of course. I knew 100% when the guys were giving it to me. Like, I could tell, like, if one of the guys was saying something about me, you just knew. And once you went,
it's pretty interesting. You could be, you know, a 10-year veteran, and if you don't see the guy who's played 10 games open on the back door, like, they're going to let you know about it. And it's just different. It's a lot different over here. There's no pecking order. It's just like everyone's the same. And, you know, it doesn't matter if you've played 10 years or 10 games, you're all going to, like, you know, get treated the same. And that's been a little bit tough at times, for sure.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Yeah, Finzi, I was going to say, like, when we got him on, I was like, I had a bunch of questions going, thinking Russian swear, and I was like, oh, wait, like, just like you said, you want to bite the hand that feeds him. He's still playing, doesn't want to do it, but...
No, yeah, don't worry, dude, here's what we're going to do. He said, well, he already said he's going to be done. He already said he might be done. So what we're going to do is we're going to reschedule this guy, and we're going to reschedule Dan for about April, May. We're going to see how they do in the playoffs. We'll keep an eye on it. They play, you know, they only play, like, I think it's what? What's your schedule over there, 50 games?
We have 8 games left after tomorrow. We've already
there you
40.
Go.
We've already played 40, 48. We have 56 games this year, and we play them all, and then we have a 1-month break, and then we play 4 more games after the Olympic break, and then the playoffs if you make the playoffs. So teams that are out of the playoffs right now, they got to wait a month to finish their season of 4 games.
Are you in the playoffs right now?
Right now we are, but I had a season where we weren't, and we had a 1-month break, and then we played 2 games. And then we They actually had something called the Hope Cup after that, which was the teams that didn't make the playoffs had to play a playoffs called the Hope Cup of all
my
names. And if you've ever seen the South Park episode where the kids are trying to lose at baseball in the South Park episode, that was the KHL Hope Cup. Both teams were trying to lose, and it was a best of 4 series. If you can imagine a best of 4 series, basically whoever scored first, the other team just refused to score after that, and they win the game.
That's the best.
Oh, yeah.
That was my first season in Russia, and I'd never been a part of anything like it. There's 8,000 fans in the game, and no one wants to win. It was crazy.
Well, tell you what, Adam's
because if you won, you had to keep playing, and if you lost, you got to go home. Like, they should have made it. They should have reversed it.
Oh, that's crazy. But time's our enemy, as of always. And Adam, make sure you and Dan stay in touch, because I'm going to have your retirement party on this show, Dan, from Russia.
I started just writing things down today when you guys, because I was like, I gotta at least like have some stuff going. And the list is like, is literally like probably 50 to 60 things long. And I did it for about 8 minutes on the bus on the way from the hotel.
Well, that's what we're going to do. So here's what we're going to do. Yeah. I want to rebook. We're actually going to make a segment, and it's actually going to be stories from Russia. No, we are. No. Perfect. So it says, this is a thing. So how many games you got left?
We have eight games left.
Eight games. So when do you think the end of the season is going to be? February,
March, April time for sure.
Okay,
April.
So tell you what, we're gonna bring you back. Keep that list, save that list, because we are actually gonna do a stories from Russia part two right here, and it is going to be our best watch show. I'm gonna make a Simon Cowell prediction here, similar to Carrie Underwood. This will be the best watch show we've ever had in 2 months from now. Yeah, I promise you.
I'll make a point to get some context to these stories, because I just wrote down like one word like 80 different times, but I know what I mean by that one word.
We're going 2 hours stories from Russia, and it's happening. Right. So we're going to book it. I'll book it with you guys, and we'll get it going. But I want to thank everybody for watching. And again, this is Off the Puck. Off the Puck Hockey. I think that's the show I host. Off the Puck Hockey and TV host. You can catch us Saturday nights, 9 p.m. Rogers TV, Channel 20. Someone had commented, why do I have pink nails? Because my daughter had told me before the show. Yeah. But thanks again to Dan Sexton for joining us all the way from Russia. And again, I'm your host, Tyler Fiennes. With me, as always, is my boy, Adam Stiles. Mikey Walker couldn't make it today. Matt Huddle, our producer. And, of course, Marty Zilscher for making our theme music. Dan Sexton, thanks so much for coming on with us.
Thank you, guys.
All right, boy, this is Off the Puck Hockey. We're out.
Yeah, thanks so much, Dan. Appreciate
Let's
it.
Go.
This has been an FHN production. Listen to our new shows every week on Thursdays on any podcast platform. Also, check out our weekly live shows on the FHN Network and the ASTV Network on YouTube or Facebook. Thank you again for listening.